Today's program has been brought to you by GreatBrewers.com, a social media marketing platform dedicated to promoting the world's great brewers and the beers they create. For more information, visit GreatBrewers.com.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Hey, welcome to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. It's February 25th, 2014. I'm here with Dave Broderick from Blind Tiger and Worthy Burger. How are you, Dave?
Good, Jimmy. How are you doing?
Good. I'm Jimmy Carboni from Jimmy's Number 43 and the Good Beer Seal. And Dave and I have been planning this will be our third year working together on the New York City Brewer's Choice. So that's coming up tomorrow, and many of you, by the time you listen to this, it will have passed. But if you're listening live, it's tomorrow night at the Wythe Hotel in Brooklyn.
Are there still some tickets left?
There are. There's about 50 tickets left. We worked it out so that there's still you'll still be able to buy them until tomorrow. So we've kind of held some back.
That's great. And how many people are going to be there tomorrow night?
It's a new venue. We used to be a city winery. This is at the Wythe Hotel. Have about 300 tickets plus guests and press and the brewers. The brewers is the big story. I mean, you've been a big part of helping to curate it, Dave, the last few years. Are there any brewers that on that list that you'd like to mention?
Well, yeah. I mean, there's a lot of new ones, which is pretty incredible. I mean, we've got Grim Artisanal. We've got Bridge and Tunnel is new to it. Big Alice. There's probably like eight or nine new breweries from the New York City area that are brand new to it. And plus Pro Pig, which isn't even on this list, which is coming down from Vermont.
Yeah, that's one of your specials, right?
Yeah, well, they're going to be at the Blind Tiger table, so I had to give him a plug.
Yeah, so you're bringing down. I mean, you're really based in Vermont now, so it's a different Dave Broderick. But so it's Chad Rich, Prohibition Pig.
Correct.
So he's actually putting in a brewery as well.
He's staying. He sent me a text. I think he sent it to a lot of people. A picture of all his kegs in his hotel room at the Wythe Hotel last night. He said it was just like college. Six small logs in his shower.
Well, what was cool is that the last few years it went from being. The first year, I think we had brewers from Ballast Point,
yeah, from all over.
Two Brothers. We had it was really a wide range of brewers. And last year it was almost all New York State when Scott Vaccaro gave the keynote speech from Captain Lawrence.
Right,
and,
right.
And that's what he talked about. And this year, what's going on is that our friends at Grow NYC have a thing called the Regional Grain Project, and they reached out to us about 6 months ago. And Kelly Taylor from Kelso was talking to them. So we want to do a beer event with a New York State grain malt. And we said, why don't we do that for Brewer's Choice? So the challenge is they had farmers growing special grains, like emmer and some other traditional grains. And they had Valley Malt do most of the malting and communicating with all the brewers. So it's been a long process for a lot of people, but I know Jeff O'Neill's here from Peekskill. He's our keynote speaker tomorrow night. Jeff, tell us a little about that process, because you jumped right in and you made some special batches of beer.
Well, we made just one, but strictly with New York State ingredients, all the way hops, malt, a yeast that I think of as a New York yeast, and also a local wild lactobacillus that we used in the souring in the brew house. So we had a really interesting experience with the ingredients.
So what was different about it?
Well, they're slightly different than the stuff you're used to. The malt definitely had a lot of character, and we were really trying to make a unique beer, like a sour beer, and incorporating the hops of sort of unknown. And the specification is tricky sometimes, but I think we did a good job, and we have a really intense sour beer that I'm really excited to debut tomorrow.
So tell us the name of that beer.
It's called The Aristocrats.
I wish everybody out there could have seen that. Then you would totally understand.
You might understand anyway.
Anyway, hopefully.
But I mean, what grains did you work with?
We used a pale malt and a rye malt, and we did a mash souring and a kettle souring programs in parallel over a weekend. So we had really low pH after 72 hours of holding at around body temperature. And then we loudered, and we actually used our cool ship in our brewery for overnight cooling before we sent the beer to fermentation.
So that was a totally new process for you.
Yeah, it was a new way to use our physical plant to I think good effect.
That's pretty cool, isn't it, Dave? I mean, you've met so many brewers over the years, and I mean, it's pretty cool that this event is able to help people innovate, right?
Yeah, just to try different things, and I've been up to Peekskill Brewing and seen his cool ship and seen I mean, he was like, the first time I went up there, he was like a kid in a candy store, like with all his new equipment and stuff, and just watching how it just seemed different, you know. There was like some really cool stuff going on up there, and he had all kinds of cool toys. So yeah, and it's nice to get to see him use them in different ways.
It's fun that it's so versatile. But what I wanted to throw in was that you all facilitated the brewers getting together with Valley Malt. And, you know, almost everybody I know jumped right on board. I had some great dialogues with other brewers about how to approach it, about what they were doing. Nobody wanted to do the same thing as anybody else. So, you know, some of us that are close talked about what we're going to do before.
Well, this is a big show. We have a grain farmer coming on. We have Valley Malt coming on. We have June Russell from Grow NYC, who has been a real big part of this regional grains project. So this show is kind of about the grains and malt and things. And also, Augie Carton's here from Hello. Carton. Augie, what do you think about Jeff's new experimental beer technique?
Yeah, it's
not new.
It's we do a couple beers that way. I haven't been up yet. I've been trying to make it there, but that's tough. But my brewing partner Jesse did go up, and he basically came home with a Christmas list of things I needed to get for us to brew with. And one of them is his cool ship, which definitely would be fun to play with in this mode.
Well, you guys got one of those hopniks, didn't you?
We did. We call it a rocket, but I think they call it a bullet.
Why don't you guys translate for me?
It's a cold side hop back, so basically when the beer is completely done, you can degas it and just add more and more hops. Rather than just dumping them in the tank, you can pump through pellets. It's a fun new toy.
You know, we got Meredith and Haley from Bearded Ladies here. Are you guys familiar with the brewing process that they're talking about?
Yeah, I'm familiar from a consumer side.
Yeah, exactly.
From consuming a lot of it. Happily.
What about you, Dave?
Definitely.
Do you understand what they're talking about, Dave?
Oh, do I understand? Yeah.
Yeah, you do.
Yeah.
So why don't you explain to me what...
Only because I've seen it.
Explain to me what they're talking about.
They're blasting the beer through hops after it comes out.
Well, to be fair, we're talking about two different things. That's my new toy. His new toy introduces
wild
lactobacillus, yeast, which is a bacteria, really, that causes a sourness, which it works in yogurt, it works in sauerkraut, it works in salami, and if you encourage it, it'll work in your beer. And that's what he did. We do it on other beers, but this beer sounds like you really did it.
Yeah, I'm excited.
He called it very primitive.
It's a primitive style of beer.
Which sounds great. I can't wait.
Is it like something like a gruet or a
No. It's certainly recognizable as beer in the context of a sour blonde or golden colored beer, but it's unique.
You know, Jeff, you people really look up to you as a brewer in New York, and I know you were at Ithaca for a long time, and you started in California, but you actually started at the Siebel Institute in Chicago, right?
No, I'm a Siebel graduate. Yeah,
Siebel graduate. Yeah.
But I started brewing before I did that in the Bay Area.
So what was your process? I mean, when did you first make beer?
In college, homebrewing in college, and then it was a bug that I caught. I lived in this house in San Francisco that had a perfect environment, you know, constant 67 degree basement with a floor drain and a laundry sink, and I got carried away as a hobbyist. There's a homebrew shop in the East Bay called More Beer, and they have sort of moved to the top of the food chain of homebrew suppliers, and they built real sort of pro style equipment for homebrewers, and I bought one of their first cylinder conical tanks. And I got carried away, and it became an unhealthy obsession, really. And my then girlfriend, now lovely wife, kind of kicked me in the butt and said, "Get a job in a brewery, because I don't want to hear about it here anymore."
I'll tell you this: if you want to see a Jeff O'Neill smile, he's smiling right now when he tells a story.
No,
let's go back to the past. This is awesome.
No, let's move on.
But, I mean, really, for real, because we're trying to get a little more perspective on you. You know, you're a technical master, and people really love your beers. But, you know, so what was the scene like when you first started? I mean, What kind of beers were you first making?
Well, I started in the Bay Area, where it was the cradle of IPAs. Racer 5 was a new beer when I was first becoming a brewer. I worked at the first brew pub that was in San Francisco, the 20 Tank. So, wonderful
place. Came out of 20 Tank.
Yeah, yeah. And we're all still
brewing.
Loosely affiliated, yeah. After that, I worked at Drake's, which is a well-known East Bay brewer that specializes in hoppy beers. We moved to Ithaca in 2002.
Did you work with a guy? Was it Roger Davis?
Roger Davis is a good old friend of mine, yeah.
Yeah, we've had him on the show before.
Yeah, he just opened his place in Alameda, Faction Brewing. Yeah, I'm really excited to try some of his beers ASAP. In fact, he and I just traded some hops.
You know that he bought, talking about New York beers, his system wasn't it Captain Lawrence's system, I think?
Jeff. Yeah, he bought the original. Out. Yep,
that's right. Yeah, he came. Oh, because I saw him at the Tiger right when he bought it.
Yeah, it's one of these small world things. When I left Drake's, a guy started there named Josh Miner. It turned out that Josh was Scott Vaccaro's roommate at UC Davis. Roger and Josh ran Drake's for a few years. Roger got to know Scott. I've known Roger for a dozen years or so. A really great brewer. Everybody's really excited about what he's doing. He's making, from what I can tell, really distinctive.
But it's cool. So he came here to buy the old Captain Lawrence system, and
he
drove it all the way back.
Yep. Well, no, I mean he had it, shipped out there. It was stored here for a little while, I think, while he was working out his place. But he's got this place, and I hope you appreciate all these. This plug, Roger. it's on the island of Alameda, right next door to the distillery, St. George Spirits, and Rockwall Winery. So they've got like a little fermentation row there. And places with a lot of space.
The last time we talked to him, he was having trouble getting the feds to finish his license.
I think he started brewing around Thanksgiving.
Yeah. So that's good.
Yeah. He's been doing some pretty cool stuff. I've only seen the styles that he's making.
Right, right. He and Claudia.
Yeah, that night.
So I'm just trying to show all the special connections that are going on, especially with NYC Brewers Choice tomorrow, because one reason it's so important is that it's really the brewers coming, making special beers, and it's really like the brewers' party, and I'm looking forward to it. And as our listeners may realize, it's been Beer Week in New York since Friday, so I think that I've been to at least two events a night since Friday, and my mind's a little slow today.
Did you go to the opening? I heard the opening night was great.
I didn't do that. I actually did something different.
Really great.
I'm doing my own beer week this week. I went on Friday night. I was actually in this room at Heritage Radio Network. I sat in on the cheese show, cutting the curd, and I did a really cool beer and food pairing with this guy, George Blaze from Eataly, who knows a lot about pairings. He's a charcuterie and cheesemonger at Eataly and Ann Saxby. And it was really cool. I'm like, we had a homebrew come in on Sunday, Zoc. He's got a store in Willimantic, Connecticut. And he came in and tasted us on like 12 of his award-winning homebrews. Well, he's a dedicated homebrewer, yeah.
All right.
So I'm just trying to. And we had a beer dinner last night with
no wonder you're foggy.
Yeah, Wandering Star, Rushing Duck, and this author Peter Kaminsky, Bacon Nation. We did a 5-course bacon dinner. And talk about beer and food pairings. This is what I think we're trying to touch on is all the special things that happen in this world of beer and Beer Week. But Augie took me out to 11 Madison Park a couple weeks ago because he's got an awesome pairing on the menu there, right?
Yeah, we make a beer called Decoy, which is kind of a deconstruction of a dish they make. They have this 5-spice duck that they plate with fruit. And the last time I'd had that dish 3 years ago, it was figs. And then I was drinking this very figgy Belgique quad with my brewing partner, Jesse. And we said, if we took the yeast out but kept the fig notes in and 5-spiced it, what would it taste like? And we call it a decoy, and we make it, they keep it, and you can go in there and get it with the duck, and it just it's kind of that pretty pairing and redundancy rather than contrast.
So I got to spend $200 to get that beer.
No. I don't know what they charge for the beer. The duck is not.
I can just get that at the bar.
Yeah, but get the duck at the bar. We wait at the bar.
You know, it's cool that you're doing these beer and food pairings. And Jeff, anything like that going on with you guys? I mean, you're bringing some food tomorrow.
Yep, we're gonna do two dishes to match our two beers. I know Chef is working on that today, actually. And we did two actual seatings of dinner at Murray's Cheese Bar last night, which was just outstanding. They really killed it with the food.
What are some of the dishes that you guys make at Peekskill?
Oh, well, we do a lot of in-house charcuterie, and we do a lot of high-end pub fare, rich dishes. A lot of focus on Hudson Valley meats and produce, cheese. We do all of our cheese service from Murray's, so we have a really interesting back and reciprocal relationship.
Yeah. Meredith and Haley, you guys, give a quick shout out because I know you have an event that you want to promote.
We do, yeah. So on Friday, we're doing an event at Gloria Tibaldi, which is the Wiley Brothers' new joint over on Franklin and Fulton in Brooklyn. It's called Women in Beer First, and it's celebrating the women of craft beer. And it actually, a bunch of the breweries are going to be on hand tomorrow are going to be there as well, like Grimm, because Lauren is an awesome, awesome female brewer. It's going to be fantastic. There's just going to be brewers on hand, total lady brewed tap takeover, 8 p.m. on.
Yep. Lots of ladies there. So.
And beer. And bearded right. Ladies.
And bearded ladies.
Well, you guys, thanks for coming on. We're taking a short break. We'll be back in a few minutes on Beer Sessions Radio. All right.
This track's called Cool Boy by Sleepies. And this is Beer Sessions Radio on HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
Hey, welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. Jimmy Carboni with Dave Broderick here talking about New York City Beer Week, New York City Brewer's Choice. And it's been a cool experience this year. You know?
Each year it gets more complicated and the email chains get longer and more interesting.
It used to be we just depended on you, like, getting all your brewery contacts.
Yeah, it used to be really easy. Now it's just like, it goes on and on and on.
But it's amazing how many breweries have opened, not even just New York City, but in New York State in the last few years.
Yeah, I go back to late 90s, and there were, I think there were about 20 breweries in Manhattan alone. And, there was Brooklyn Brewery in Brooklyn. And now it's, and then they all went out of business except for Brooklyn and Heartland. And now we're back up to probably getting close to 20. And they're in all the boroughs, which is just a huge change.
Oh, that's amazing. And Jeff, what did you bring? Jeff O'Neill from Peekskill. What beer are we drinking right now?
I brought a pale ale that we have out around the city for the week, for Beer Week. It's called NYPA. And it's a beer that we don't add any hops to until we're done boiling. We start doing heavy hop additions, but not any until we're done boiling the wort. We do a big addition in our whirlpool, then up in our cool ship, and then a lot of dry hopping. So it's one of those... sort of new ways of driving flavor and aroma out of ingredients.
It's really nice. It's really good.
Yeah, it's really low alcohol and easy drinking.
How was that? I know for the GABF, you won an award for the Amazeballs.
Amazeballs. They're sort of cousin beers. It's the same approach.
Yeah. Pale ales.
Yeah.
It's great. Well, now come in the studio now, kind of the whole onus behind this, the Brewer's Choice this year is there's a thing called the Regional Grains Project. And it's June Russell's in the house from Grow NYC. Tor, you got to say your last name too.
Oshner.
Tor Oshner, who's a grains farmer from upstate, and Christian and Andrew are from Valley Malt. So there's a whole cycle here that June reached out to us last year and said, we want to do an event with regional grains that are going to be malted, and the brewers would make beer. And so. June, give us a little background on the Regional Grains Project, because it's kind of like the basis of beer is malt, right?
Oh, yeah. We're fans of hops, but we've been saying for a while, like, beer's made from grain. Where's the grain in the mix when we talk about local beer? So we're excited to get to the place where there's any volume for folks to work with. And as Tor, we've been working with Tor for at least 4 years, maybe 5 years. Tor also is one of the main growers for Farmer Ground Flour. So other fans of local grains, you've been having Tor's food for quite a while now. And just to get to the capacity, things that you guys have talked about on the show, getting appropriate seed to grow in the region, and farmers who know how to grow those grains, and the infrastructure, such as the malting facilities, which Andrea and Christian finally entered into in 2010. And so all of these things have been part of the Grains Project, which began when we were looking for local flour for our bakers, but then also realized that to get any sort of capacity for our growers to have, you know, marketable product, it would take everybody involved in the grain sector. And so that includes bakers, chefs, distilleries, and now breweries. Barley is probably lagged behind just a little bit in terms of the development for varieties in the region, but it's happening, and we're going to taste some tomorrow, so we're pretty excited.
Tor, what are some of the grains that you're growing, in particular traditional grains that are being malted for beer?
Yeah, we, in terms of the stuff that we're growing for malting, basically rye, wheat, and barley are the three things that we sell to Valley Malt to be malted into beer. And we're a certified organic producer. So we also grow corn and oats and buckwheat, some spelt and emmer as well. So we have a variety of crops that we work with. But in terms of beer, those would be the main ones.
So what are some of the challenges of growing grain in the Northeast as opposed to where it mostly comes from?
Yeah, I mean, these are some of the problems that I think New York State will run into in terms of expanding the particularly in organic production. I mean, I run into this early because I started a flour mill, and some of the same quality issues that you want in terms of a good grain for milling into flour, the same sort of problems you can get into for grains for malting. So, and one of the big problems that we've got is because of the humid, wet weather, there's a disease called Fusarium that gets into the grains and can cause vomitoxin, which makes it unedible.
It's a very
pretty sounding thing. So that can only be one part per million in the grain. We have to get that tested. And there's some cultural things that I've figured out to do in terms of crop rotation, sequencing, using crops that are biofumigants without going on too long about this, that have helped me as an organic farmer to produce these crops without a lot of vomitoxin problems and harvest management.
Tor, one second. Just so you know, our other guests, the Valley Malt guys, want a glass of beer. That's why we're on there. And they're all drinking the Peekskill.
It's delicious.
What's it called? The
NYPA.
NYPA. Yeah. So I'm only just talking to Tor because we may have said more than we've ever heard about grains on the show ever.
All right. Yeah,
let's have our brewers, Jeff and Augie, to say a few things about grains or malts and you know, how the challenges of working with something new or unknown, perhaps.
Did you guys make a beer for tomorrow?
We were kind of the Jersey-headed stepchild of the grain thing. But you know how I'm always making the similes to cuisine. I find it's real easy when I'm talking about this stuff to non-beer people to say malts are your protein or your main, right? So that's what you're building on. Say it's a chicken. Think of that as like Pilsner malts. And then you got your yeast, which is kind of your regional stamp. So say you're doing cilantro and cumin, now you're Mexican. Say you're doing fenugreek and cumin, now you're Indian. That's your yeast. And then your hops are your herbs, and you sprinkle them on top. So if you put it in early and cook it, you got a little green. You put it on late, you got, you know, a little chlorophyll contrast. But it's all what you're building on. And it actually is pretty easy to think of as those proteins, right? Your white malts are your white meats, and your dark malts are your dark meats. You can go bigger and bolder on darker.
Okay, did you ever write poetry?
No, but I drink a lot.
I'm gonna give a high five to Augie. That was pretty cool. I want some
Irish poet.
Fenugreek in my beer.
It's de facto poet, right?
And Jeff, what about you? What's the malt and grain thing for you?
The malt and grain thing. Well, it's the backbone. For us, we're small and we're agile, so we can do a lot of. That's how we differentiate our beers from each other. Every beer has a different base malt in our brewery. which I think helps to keep it, you know, really bright, shiny lines between the beers.
Of the beers that we know, like, just want to tell us the base malts. So, like, with
sure, the three beers that we send out to local beer, distribution. Yeah. Eastern Standard IPA, which is our flagship, that's made with a Vienna malt. I'm not going to tell you which one. It's actually not a Vienna malt. It's an in between Pils and Vienna malt. Simple Sour is a much more pale base malt. It's Pils. It's got some other adjuncts in it, corn and wheat and some other things. And then Hop Common, which is the beer that they have on here at Roberta's, is a German Vienna malt, which is a much much more characterful.
So what's funny is when so many brewers have a certain hop, they'll always say, "Oh, we're using this hop," but you actually, for your grains, you're saying you kind of have a secret recipe.
Well, I wouldn't call it a secret, but it might not be what I want to talk about on the air. You know.
No, it's cool. And then we got Christian.
I should say. When I make what I think of as American-style beers, I like to use American ingredients. When we make beers, the jumping-off point is a more historic thing. We try to use the appropriate ingredients where necessary. So when we make American IPA, we try to use American-grown ingredients exclusively. When we make American-style sour, I like the idea of American ingredients. When we're doing something that's more malt forward or more old world, it becomes a more crucial part of the beer.
Awesome. We also have Andrea and Christian from Valley Malt, too. The other piece, we have Regional Grains Project, the grain farmer, the brewers, and the people that actually make the malt, Andrea and Christian. We've had you on before, but just say a few things. We're going to have more time to talk to you, but say a few things about this project that we did for New York City Brewers' Choice. Andrea, come on.
Well, I'd just like to say it's nice to be in the room here, and this beer is delicious. Are these Cascade hops?
No, it's actually two newer varieties, Citra and Mosaic.
Okay.
But they're both from...
Oh, Mosaic. I love
They're
Mosaic.
Both from a particular farm that we do direct business with, and I chose these lots of hops out there in Yakima last fall.
Okay.
So it's sort of that important relationship between where it's from and you know, how it's been handled and the whole chain of custody between the field and the brew house.
And Mosaic's the sluttiest hop ever.
Augie, you got
to
talk off.
I said, and Mosaic's the sluttiest hop ever. It's just trying to make everybody at the party happy, and it's really nailing it. That's all.
What's one word to describe Mosaic?
Slutty.
Slutty?
Swear to God.
Yeah. But you don't like that word?
All right. Andrew, quick. Malt.
So I would say...
How about working with Tours Grains?
Yeah.
And then what you did with the malt and things like
that. Give the mic to Tor. Tor, what is your nickname for me?
Stalker babe.
So I had to stalk Tor because
Slutty? No, that was yeah. Stalker, not slutty. Okay.
My husband's right here, actually. So shh. No, I had to stalk Tor. I met him at a grain conference, and I just knew in listening to how he spoke about what he did for a living that he really cared. And if I wanted to malt something that was world class, that I wanted to buy it from him. So, you know, working with Tours Grains is fairly easy, I would say, because it's clean, it's beautiful. It's, you know, a lot of times what happens, and this goes to June's point about a regional grain infrastructure, is that you can't just grow grains and expect to just sell to bakers, because if he's growing grain and we have a lot of rain, that wheat might not have the protein that a baker's going to need. But guess what? Low protein, I want it, because that's what a brewer's going to want. So I become a secondary market for his wheat, which is amazing, but it might not meet the protein specs of a baker. But it will meet the protein specs of a maltster and a brewer. So this is where, and then having distillers in the picture, if there are particular issues that don't make it suitable for brewing, it might make it suitable for like a very husky barley, a barley that has like a lot of tannins and a lot of husk, perfect for whiskey, not so great for brewing. So this is where, you know, everybody getting on board and everybody seeing, you know, where they fit in really is the big picture, I think. So I would say that, you know, working with Tours Grains is a dream. It comes clean. It comes, you know, without diseases like he was talking about, and has wonderful germination, which is, you know, my job is to make sure that that grain can sprout, and then we dry it down and we, you know, send it off to breweries so that they can mill it and make wort out of it.
Andrew, just give us a few words about your interaction with the brewer like Jeff. So you've got these different malts from different grains. How do you sell it to him? Or is it like you guys?
I'm going to be brutally honest. My interaction with Jeff this year was a little bit difficult because part of the malt that I sent him, some of it was really delicious and looked great, and some of it was a little off color, and part of that was the growing season this year, and it was great. Jeff and I had a lot of really good exchanges and emails in terms of what was going on and why did this malt he get look darker. It shouldn't look this dark, and yes, it shouldn't look this dark if it's not coming from a commodity, you know, supplier, but for the growing year that we had this year, that's what we had to work with, which was very wet. And so the grain had, you know, was off colored. And so you still brewed a great beer with it.
I think so.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's part of doing it, right?
But this is part of the transparency and the honesty and the communication that goes into, you know, we can't paint a picture that this is just perfect and, you know, awesome. Because it's hard and it's
real.
Challenging.
It's like everything else, right? Yeah.
So.
I mean, Jeff, how often could you make, if you were getting special small batches of malt from New York State Grain, like how often could you make a new beer? Would you want to do it every month or only once a year?
Well, it could be something we did seasonally. Like, I think that our batch size is about 1,200 pounds, and that's what relative to your output?
We do about 10,000 pounds a week right now.
How much of it is like one lot? That's like what's a...
Like a batch size for us, we turn around five batches a week, okay. Basically, and a batch size for us is 2,000 pounds.
A ton. Yeah. Okay.
David, any questions about malt?
No, I'm just taking off. No, yeah.
I'm drinking more malty beers lately. So.
Well, I'm actually curious to ask Andrea, like, so how much of the grain that you're getting is coming from the Pioneer Valley from your area, and how far do you have to go to satisfy your needs?
We go New England and New York is our regional area. So we're buying mostly from the Finger Lakes region of New York and then the Pioneer Valley. And then occasionally we'll have a farmer call us from Pennsylvania and they grew barley and there's no malt house in Pennsylvania and they ship us their barley and we malt it so that they can sell it to their local brewery. So contract malting, I guess.
And so when you have a, like this summer was brutal in terms of rain.
Yep.
And so what do you do then? You know, when locally.
You learn how to be a maltster, which is really, you know, I mean, it's like you learn how to malt, you know, good stuff, but then you have to learn how to malt not so good stuff too. So it's where I'm learning over the, you know, this year I learned a lot about my craft. And luckily I have people to talk to, malting science professors and stuff, to say, you know, I have this barley, it's giving me this issue. And luckily there's people out there willing to help me and say, hey, you know, change your steep schedule and see if that helps and that sort of thing. So, but I mean, definitely growing both winter grains and spring grains gives a little bit of enough diversity there that you hope that one or the other will do okay.
Yeah. And we also contracted about, I think four times the amount of barley that we use this year. So, you know, we're putting it out there. We need a lot of barley, but then typically we only get a quarter or less of what we ask for back. And that barley might be, like Andrea's saying, we just do the best we can with that barley we've received.
Wow. Hey, that's cool. We're going to keep talking about grains and malt and Brewer's Choice. We'll be back in a few minutes on Beer Sessions Radio.
This one's also by Sleepies. It's called Combat, and this is Beer Sessions Radio on Heritage Radio Network.
So you like good beer. Whether you're a craft beer pro or just had your first sip of an IPA, GreatBrewers.com is your number one beer resource on the internet. GreatBrewers.com bridges the gap between the world's great brewers and the consumers who enjoy their products. With so much information and misinformation out there, GreatBrewers.com focuses on education and leaves no stone unturned. Take the Great Beer Test on their website and browse through an extensive product catalog. Download their mobile beer cloud app, which includes a GPS beer finder, a beer sommelier, and descriptions for over 5,000 different brews. What are you waiting for? Back up that passion for craft beer with some solid information and education. Visit GreatBrewers.com today.
Hey, welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. Out here at Roberta's in Bushwick, Brooklyn, we're drinking some Pisco Hop Common. Swizzler from
Swisher, I think.
Swisher from Carton Brewing.
There's a story behind it.
What is the Swisher story?
Ask Jeff.
I can't believe it. That was Augie. I can't believe you just left it. Augie Carton was just in.
It's very complex. You don't want to do it on the air.
Ready for a brewer's choice for New York City Beer Week. We got our regional grains project. We got a grains farmer, brewers, and maltsters. So, Jeff, you just asked a question. We had a conversation going with the maltsters. Would you ask Andrew that question again?
Sure. I was curious about what the relative breakdown of brewers versus distillers as customers of theirs was.
And I said about 50%.
So you think that brewers get the better grain and distillers are just kind of losers or what?
No, certainly not.
What?
No, I just think it's interesting because craft distilling is in such a proliferation mode, and I know there are many new ones local to you now. I imagine that you might do business tour with some of the Finger Lakes distillers, right? Is that correct?
All over. Actually, Brooklyn Distilling down here is my biggest customer.
And you can sell it to them raw, some of the
A lot of it. I mean, Brad Estabrook takes about 5 tons a week off of my farm to make into all sorts of alcohol. So, yeah, he's a great guy.
Jim, what are some of the other farms that you're working with on the Regional Grains Project?
Well, there's a range of scales. There's some folks that are working with just a few acres, like Richard Giles of Lucky Dog Farms is working some grains into his rotations. Klaus Martins, who's up near Tor, is like one of our spiritual elders in the grains projects. And his son Peter Martins has a farm now. I know that you, Valley Malt, you work with them. And we did the Green Market wheat beer using Peter's barley. And there's a big range, a lot of Amish growers in Pennsylvania. Like with the Green Market region, we go New Jersey, eastern Pennsylvania, New York up to the Finger Lakes, some of Vermont. Some of our collaborators are at the University of Vermont and Cornell, of course, SNOFA, Ogrin. Tor probably knows. You work with a lot of
Andrea,
grain growers.
Who else are you buying grain from besides Tor?
Well, the guy sitting to the right of me.
Hey, Kristen, you're a grain farmer too?
Yeah, I farm a little bit over 100 acres, I think, now. It's going up as per phone calls on the way here, I think.
Right.
It's interesting because a lot of times farmers will start off farming and then they figure out ways to add value to what they're growing to make money. And we started off malting and then decided that we wanted to grow grain. So now, 3 years into it, we went from growing zero to growing 100 acres.
So why aren't there more malt facilities in this region?
Where's the grain?
There's also, 4 or 5 opening up in New York or are in the process this year. I mean, I know of 2 in Western New York, 3 in Western New York, 1 in Rochester, 1 right near Tor. So, I mean, there's a bunch opening up around, especially in New York with the farmer brewer law, farm distilling. I mean, New York is probably, if you want to open a malt house, one of the best states to be in right now. Unfortunate for us, I guess, as Valley Malt in Massachusetts, but fortunate for New York state malt houses.
All right.
But in a year like this year, where there were 4 malt houses wanting to get started, a lot of them don't have the grain to actually malt because it was such a bad year. So I guess that's where I say, where's the grain? Because that's part of it. It's the chicken or the egg. It's like, how does somebody feel comfortable venturing into buying all this equipment and starting a malt house if they don't know that there's a supply of grain to malt.
Okay, wait, Tori, you just got a phone call. So what's going on back at the farmhouse? What's going on back at the farm right now?
He didn't answer the call, so he doesn't know.
So in the winter, we're fixing equipment, getting ready. We farm 1,200 acres, so we have a lot of ground to run over. So we're fixing on tractors and stuff. And then we're a processor, too. So all the grain on my farm, and I buy in grain from other farms, is run through cleaning equipment to get processed to go to places like Valley Malt or flour mills or distilleries to get. So that's sort of an ongoing thing all year long. We're always processing grain.
And Jeff and Tony Ford is here from Ale Street News too. Jeff, you've traveled a lot, but what are typical like malt facilities like? I mean, where were you buying your malt from in the past before there was local grain?
You know, I've done business with an American maltster called Breese for a long time through several breweries that I've worked at, and they're in Wisconsin. They're a family owned maltster, and they have a really unique historic location with a very old grain elevator. You guys have probably been there, yes. Mm-hmm. And they have this really sort of craft, you know, sort of very analogous to what we do in small breweries, that very hands on. And then a few blocks away, they have this ultra modern brew house, and it might be a 500 barrel brew house. It's a really big brew house.
That's what it is.
And they do not have any fermentation. It's the oddest thing. It's a standalone brew house. It's like dairy, a dairy level of sanitation. It's they can bring tankers in. They make extracts, malt extracts for all sorts of things. But they're a really interesting mix of the art and the science of malting and the whole spectrum. And they offer nearly every sort of specialty malt that you can think of.
Yeah, one of the largest ones I've been in, excuse me, is
Tony Ford from Wall Street.
Bamberg, Wireman,
oh, sure.
That supplies a lot of the craft brewing industry with specialty malts, and it's like the Willy Wonka of brewing. They have the yellow and the red uniforms, but they're very efficient, and they really do a good job.
I've seen that if you look at Ale Street News, that you always have an ad from Wireman's, don't you?
Yeah, they support the industry.
It's
they support
fun,
us.
It's like a graphic of the factory.
Pretty
looks
much.
Like the 19th century.
It is. It's very historical. Sabine Wireman is descended from the founders of the maltery, the malt house, and so it was really she made a decision to either go with the family business or leave, and she decided with her husband Johan to really take it up a notch and really modernize, and they developed a lot of specialty type malts. I'm sure Jeff could speak to that.
They
more,
make but. Wonderful. They malt wonderful products. They really do.
Christian, so.
Yeah, I'd just like to say something. Specialty malts are only around 10% of what brewers use. And really, specialty malt market has developed because the malting market has become more of a commodity market. And they've developed specialty malts to flavor malts. Because in the old days, they didn't have specialty malts. They brewed with the malts they had. And the wood firing or the way they kiln the malt, that made the flavor. And so, we're talking about specialty malt markets, but really what the craft malting market, I think the goal is in a way is what can we do with our grains without these specialty malts? Because that's what really develops the regional flavors. And by making a malt that has a lot of flavor, we're almost hoping, I think this is long-term, but that maybe single malt beers can come back into style per what they were 100 years ago.
June, I want to ask you, I know for the Regional Grains Project, you guys had a list of different traditional grains that you were hoping that brewers would make beers with. What are some of the traditional grains that we don't see too often?
Well, there's some grains that we've been working on through a grant project, some of the ancient, they're called the ancient wheat varieties, and those are Emmer, Spelt, Einkorn, and those are some of the older grains that have not gone through the hybridization and modernization that wheat varieties have. But across the board, we've been, looking to definitely help develop anything that our farmers could sell, basically, that they could grow and sell. So, the Danko rye, I saw on the list, there's couple of brewers are going to be working with some of the Danko rye. And, you know, rye, even 4 or 5 years ago, we did not have much in terms of grain. There was no rye seed being grown.
Not good rye seed.
Yeah. You know, oats, the barley, of course. I've been a big fan of Emmer as something that I think is going to have a lot of potential in our region. So we've put a lot of work into trying to educate people about what Emmer is and spelt. Also, I mean, those are varieties that are hardy and they have resilience. And as we go into more crazy weirding, global weirding, some people call it, that we'll be looking for some of these varieties that can withstand those climate fluctuations. They're not the big yielders like some of the conventional agriculture has been able to produce, but we're getting good nutritional aspects and good, you know, interesting quality and good culinary aspects to those.
So if you have a good grain, then my beer is really nutritional.
Absolutely.
Maybe. Dave, Vermont, anything going on up there with malt or grains or anything?
Yeah, there's
all
a
the
lot
brewers,
of,
you know.
There's definitely a lot of grain growing up there. I mean, and they had a very tough summer too. But we've got some a bunch of distilleries opening up, tons of them. Obviously, we have a lot of breweries. And a lot of them are trying to. A lot of the distilleries are using local grains, particularly Silo. I know is using someone from just down the road in the Windsor area. So it's definitely happening up there. But I mean, you know, our soil is pretty tough up there, and our weather has been pretty tough, and so it's not easy.
I remember reading some old stories about Vermont where it's like people are just stuck in mud in the spring when the
weather.
Yeah,
it's hard to plant in the spring and. And this past summer, it just rained almost every single day, and so it was tough. It's very tough.
Now, thanks for coming down, Dave. You come down, I know, once a month to New York and check on your Blind Tiger, and we're looking forward to our event tomorrow.
It's going to be good.
Bruce. I want to ask Tor a question. Tor, so, okay, if there was one grain you could grow that might be good for beer, what would it be that you're not growing now?
Well, I'd like to perfect barley. We grew some last year for Brooklyn Distilling, a winter variety that winter killed pretty bad, and we're going to try some spring barley now and hopefully work on growing. It hasn't been a crop that I grew a lot of because I didn't have a demand for it, but, you know, obviously it's an up-and-coming thing, so we're going to be working on barley.
Great. And Jeff, if there was a grain that you could make beer with or your favorite grain to make beer with or something like that.
Well, it's barley. You can't do it without barley. It would be great to, I mean, it would be really great to have a consistent, like, I know that that's the juggle, is an inconsistent input. It's hard to make the same thing every time coming out. That's sort of the way that brewers grow, is by creating brands that have legs and things they can rest their laurels on. And do you have a Massachusetts brewer who has, like, a flagship-style product that's made with something local?
Did we, like, just telepathically?
Could be.
Yeah. So I wanted to say Spelt. June brought up Spelt. And for 3 years now, I've been trying to get people to want Spelt. And it just seems like 2014 is the year of Spelt, because I have had so many brewers interested in ordering Spelt. And one of our brewers that is a huge supporter of what we do, Jack's Abbey out of Framingham, Massachusetts, they put Spelt into Hoponius Union, which is one of their flagship beers. And so they're ordering tote sacks of Spelt from us, like, on a very regular basis. So, again, this is, like, building now a demand for Spelt, like a good demand for it. So,
Does it come and go fairly consistent, the product in and out?
Because we're getting it from the same farm, the same field, Lakeview. Peter Martin's and Lakeview, Klaus Martin's Lakeview Organic Grain. Yeah, they have a consistent, good supply of Spelt. They know what they're doing. They have a handle on how to grow it. And so even season to season, it's happening. Where
how many crops in here?
One.
Just one?
Yeah. So, yeah, so that's
winter and spring.
Okay.
Yeah. How would those go for brewing?
Wait, June's on.
Oh, sorry.
I was just asking Tor, because there are winter and spring varieties of Spelt, so you'll get two grain crops in a year. But would one of those be better for brewing than the other?
I have no idea, actually. Yeah, I'm guessing the winter one, because it's probably a little bit lower protein, and that's what you want.
So, this has been the deep as we ever went with grains and malts.
Too deep.
And all I'm saying is one thing for Dave and I and Jeff, I'll say this. I've enjoyed, and more customers, I think, are asking for beers with more of a malt forward character than hop. And we've had some new Czech lagers, like from Conrad. They're like 6%. Like, I guess they're pre-communist style. I don't know if you've had anything like that. Or we had the guys from Kulmbacher in last week, and they had like an old Keller style beer. But remember a few years ago, Stefan Marr from Marr's Brauhaus was, we did a tasting at Jimmy's number 43. And we knew he had six beers, and there were some Weiss beers and Bock's. And there was one beer that was like, it was called the Lichte. It was 2.5%, yet it had a small hoppy character. And the way he did the flight of tastings, I was like totally shocked. It was like, wow, you're starting with the Weiss beer, then the Bock's, then you're going to the 2.5% Lichte. And the Lichte exploded in our mouth because the first three were all malt forward. And then the Lichte had a little bit of hops. And it was an interesting experience for me. I don't know about Dave, if you've had any feelings about malt and malt forward beers.
Oh, I think about malt all the time, Jimmy. Especially after this show. I'm going to be dreaming about it.
I know. But we got to get some more. So I guess we have to have more malt forward beers. And how are we going to do that, Jeff? Would you ever make a real malty beer without too many hops?
We make a whole range of beers at the Peekskill Brewery, including several really malty ones, believe it or
not. What are they called?
Through this winter, we actually had a really nice Baltic porter on called Moscow on the Hudson. We're going to have that at the Blind Tiger next month at our nice. Event, holding on to one for you. We have a beer called Malt Balls, which is made with an aromatic Munich malt. It has that real toasty, malted, you know, that whopper type aroma. We have a beer called Slow and Low, which is a smoked lager that's almost completely about nice. The malt. So it's not always just about hops, you know. We try to do something for everybody who comes into our place, and malty beers are a part of that.
That's one last thing. Tony Forder from Ales Reduce. Tony, first of all, tell us, you had a special guest who was going to come on the show, but she was late at the airport. Tell us.
Yeah, Janine Mawar from Mondial de la Bière up in Montreal. She's down for a couple of days for the beer week. And as happens, you know, especially this winter, her flight was delayed. So she touched down in Newark just about when we started the show. So, you know, future.
Rain Tony, check. Tell us about a couple kind of malt forward beers that you like.
Malt forward beers. Let me think a little bit. You kind of caught me off balance here. Let me tell you something about Jimmy. Let me tell me about something. What you're doing? A little collaboration between Ale Street and Beer Sessions Radio. Our correspondent Mary Izette, who also has a show here for Met About It, has hung up her pen for Ale Street News, moving on to other things. And I believe Beer Sessions Radio is going to be our correspondent for New York City.
I think that Maggie Seiden, one of our producers, is going to take up that column. Yeah. That's awesome, and thanks for doing that. Cheers to Maggie. She's doing
it. All right, Maggie.
If you do it at @beer_sessions, you get Maggie Seiden, our buddy. All right. So, hey, and Beard Ladies, thanks for coming on again. I know you've got Friday, your Women in Beer event, which is also cool. You got some great women. I mean, Haley Jensen, there's so many great women in beer in New York. You guys are really cool. Again, we'll give a shout out. It's New York City Beer Week. We're in the middle of it, and I'm still going, right?
You're still going, man.
Yeah. And that's all I can say right now. I've been doing this long. I can't even do my thanks, but thanks again to our sponsor, greatbrewers.com, who helped to bring this podcast to you tonight. Thanks, everyone. His name's Chief Jeff O'Neill, June, everybody at Tor. I'm Jimmy Carboni. Thanks to our producers, Maggie Seiden and Justin Kennedy, engineer Joe Galarraga. Thanks for listening. See you next time on Beer Sessions Radio. All right.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.